hissing static. Hadn't been able to raise Sirius Radio or XM all morning. He started to fiddle with the dial, trying to get a local station, but Martha slapped his hand gently. "You pay attention to your driving, Charlie. I'll find us some music."
"Put on one of my CDs," Charlie Jr. piped.
Over her shoulder, Martha said, "Your father wants to get the weather report, dearie. Isn't that right, Charlie?" He nodded vigorously. The snow didn't seem very serious, but out here in the mountains you had to be extra careful. He remembered seeing a sign a few miles back for an RV camp. "If the weather turns really bad," Charlie thought, "we can turn in at one of them." Charlie craned his neck to look at the sky. Some heavy gray clouds out there, but still plenty of blue. Might just be a snow shower. Or if it's a real storm, maybe we'll outrun it. Storms usually come in from the west. We're doing 70. That's faster than any storm can travel. He had put the SUV on cruise control once they had hit an area of the highway where there were only a few other cars on the road. Charlie didn't mind traffic, although he couldn't use the cruise control when he had to keep hitting the brakes all the time. "It's those dratted semis," he complained silently, "especially when it rains. They sploosh up beside you like a dratted tidal wave." Martha found a local station playing country and western songs. Charlie relaxed a little. If there was a bad storm coming, they'd be putting out a warning instead of playing their regular music. He decided to wait until the top of the hour when they played the news and weather. And sports. Martha didn't know it, but he had bet money on the Seahawks. Able 1. Crew Compartment. "We're at cruising altitude," Colonel Christopher's voice came through the intercom speaker in the compartments overhead. Harry clicked his safety harness release, and the straps slid into their receptacles on the back of his seat. To Rosenberg, he said, "Check the tank pressures, Wally." Rosenberg nodded sullenly and got to his feet. "Angel," Harry said to Reyes, "I want you to purge the oxygen line." Reyes gave him a questioning look. "Purge it?" Standing in the narrow aisle between the facing seats, Harry said, "There was a speck of grease in the oxy line when the rig blew up. I want to make sure the line's absolutely clean." "That was 3 years ago, Harry. We haven't had any trouble since then."
"Because we've been extra careful," Harry said. "Purge the line, Angie."
With a slight grin, Reyes got out of his chair. The top of his head barely rose above Harry's shoulder.
"Okay, Jefe. I'll purge it."
Then he added, "Again." Nakamura came to her feet too, even shorter than Reyes.
"I'll check out the board."
She had the most critical job, Harry knew. The battle management system had to find the boosting missile and lock the laser onto it. He thought of little Taki as a sharpshooter. But her rifle weighed tons and took up most of the 747's interior volume. This was supposed to be a test flight, Harry said to himself. "We don't have a full crew aboard, and we're supposed to shoot down a real missile. A real missile that's carrying a real hydrogen bomb." He wondered if they could do it. "Make it work," Anson had told him. "But now it's more than the company depending on us. This time it's for real." As his teammates slowly started for the compartment's hatch, Harry said, "Wait a minute. I've got something to tell you." They looked at him questioningly. "The North Koreans set off a nuclear bomb in orbit this morning, and it looks like they've got more missiles ready to fire at us."
"Us? You mean America?"
Delaney growled. "Goddamn gooks, we should have wiped them out long ago." Nodding slowly, Harry said,